Hey everyone, welcome to What Are You Watching? I'm Alex Whither and I'm joined by my best man, Nick Dostal. How you doing there, Lewis Strauss? Don't call me Strauss.
Oh man, I don't know if I can. I can't do an impression. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, bottom line. The best time you could do an impression is like at the end when he's like, he would do it all over. Why? Oh God, I love him. We're going to talk about him. I have a bone to pick with RDJ, but we're going to talk about him. You're excited to be here. I'm excited.
It's that time of the year, Alex.
Oscar predictions. It's the most wonderful time of the year. This is just wild because every year since we've had this podcast going, when we're doing the Oscar predictions episode, this episode, we always try to have a good attitude. You know, you were like a pig in shit last year because your favorite movie of the year did very well, ended up doing very well, and that's okay. Not when we recorded the episode. When we recorded the episode, that son of a bitch was your favorite thing.
It was.
And then, you know, a year later, you very wisely stepped up and hailed Babylon as your favorite film of 2022, not Everything Everywhere. Anyway, this is the 2024 Oscars for the movies of the year 2023. We're here today. We are going to talk about what we think is going to win, what movies are going to win, what performances are going to win. We're going to try to contextualize why they are going to win, because as we like to say, to win an Oscar, for a movie or a performance to win an Oscar nowadays, you got to have a narrative. You usually have to have a narrative that the press is touting, that your publicity team is getting out there. We're in the thick of it. We are recording this episode on Sunday, March 3rd. I'm going to get it out there as quickly as I can. Here we are. Voting for the Oscars ended a few days ago, so it's going to be fun.
Tell them what we're doing. Tell them the exciting news.
It's exciting. It is. I can't believe you talked me into doing this.
Yes.
Okay, here it is. A little housekeeping, actually, before we get to the predictions. Little housekeeping, but all fun stuff. As it relates to the Oscars, the next time we record a podcast, we will be in person. I will be flying out to Los Angeles, as I usually do, to watch the Academy Awards with you. For the first time ever, What Are You Watching history, we're going live. Are we going live at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, Sunday, March 10th, 2024. Keep in mind, the Oscars are starting an hour earlier this year. So if you're on the East Coast, they usually start at 8. They're starting at 7. The plan right now is to go live 1 hour before the actual telecast begins and then stay live right up until the telecast starts. So the telecast on Pacific Time will begin for us at 4 p.m. That means we're going to go live at 3 p.m. What are we going to talk about? We're going to have the red carpet on in the background on mute, but we're mostly going to be talking about our final day of predictions. Here's who we think is going to win. If you have questions for us about anything, about the Oscars, about movies, you can ask us live. If you don't have time to tune in because you're in a different country or you're just busy that day, I later will be posting it on YouTube, so you'll be able to see it there because I'm going to download the video file and upload it later. So that'll be fun. But that's it. We're going live, baby.
Yeah. Talk to us, everyone. We're going to be live. We got your questions.
Yeah, you got your answers. You sell it. This was your idea.
Yes.
You sell it.
Yes. 1 hour before the Oscars, during the red carpet, we'll be talking about the red carpet. We can talk about the dresses and the suits and the hula.
Oh, yes.
But yeah, questions come at us. We want to talk to you mad movie buffs. We're very excited because this has been something that I've wanted to do for a while, where it's just like, let's get some live interaction. We're going to have a sick hotel.
We do. Yeah, we got a sick hotel room. So it's going to be, you know, nice setup, and it'll be all good. You'll see us certainly me, like this is my entire day, weekend. Like I get very, very excited for this stuff. So we'll just be in rare form, very excited. But yeah, it's not going to take us long to go through each category live. But then, if you have questions, submit them. You can ask live, you know, on Instagram, or you can submit them early via social media or email, whatever. Our Instagram handle, probably should have said this up top, is WAYW_podcast. That's what it is on all social media that we're on. But we will go live on Instagram probably like 5 minutes before that. Wait for a few people.
Come hang out with us.
It'll be great. Yeah, come hang out. It's going to be a lot of fun. I will be sipping champagne. Who knows what you'll be doing?
I'll be hammered.
Oh my God, already? And then there'll be a direct, you know, correlation from that recording to the next podcast we record is directly after the show.
After.
The coveted post-Oscar show. All right, so that's housekeeping one. Housekeeping item two, this doesn't have to do with the Oscars. And I can make this real quick. I've received so many nice messages about the Sleepers podcast and in general. I mean, from people I work with, shout out to Kat, who did the Succession podcast with me, and Emma Rose. They're both huge fans. Big shout out to them. We've had people on Instagram reach out about that episodes. We've had a few people on Instagram, our new fan Riley, tell us that just us talking about the Oscars has gotten him into watching the show and like into it. And I looked at this and I was like, what? I don't know. I never thought that me like rambling on and complaining, mostly, let's be honest, complaining about this governing body of the Academy Awards, that would motivate people to become interested. But I mean, you know, it's just great. It's great. I'm so happy that people are interested and people are digging the show, and that, you know, when we do get serious, people respond to that too. So it's just all good. And thank you. That's it.
Thank you. And you're welcome.
Humility. You have about as much humility as the probable supporting actor winner this year. All right, let's do it. We're getting to it. I'm kidding. No, okay. Here we go. 2024 Oscars. We're going to do these per your recommendation, and we're going to lead to Best Picture. Best Picture will be last. And
ascending order.
Ascending, yes. We're going to talk about every movie, every category. We're going to get into it. I have not been able to see everything. I've been able to see everything that is pretty much available, but I've seen a lot. So let's get into it.
We will have our rock solid predictions on our Instagram Live. So that will be our finalized. You'll follow it with us if you want to. But right now we're going to give our loose predictions and some things that maybe we haven't seen and talk about potentially what the narratives could be, because there are some interesting things even where we're starting that I think is actually pretty new for Oscars.
Yeah, there's some good stuff here, and it's definitely going to be different content. Like what we're doing right today is we're going to explain a lot of the narratives and how we got there. When we go live right before the Oscars, we're not gonna have time to get into each race. So that's what this is. And I don't think my opinions are gonna change. I think everything is kind of sealed up. I mean, voting's done. So to the voters, everything's sealed up. We'll see.
And don't forget, there is a very, very real and very, very true deal.
I didn't know you're holding me to this. He knows. Oh, yes. He knows. I told him. Dan knows. Yeah. All right. So to clue everyone in on this, and then I promise we'll get to these awards. The bet is that if you get more winners right than me, then I have to give you $500. But if I give more winners right than you, then I get to punch our friend of the pod, Dan, in the face once. So yes. Dan has been made aware of this. He said he didn't really have a problem. I did shape it up a little bit, and I said I can wear a boxing glove, but I won't go at you like full strength. But then he said, "What's actually going to happen?" And I was like, "I don't know. It's really tough." Like Nick and I agree personally on our what we think the best performances are, the best movies are, but that what you think is the best does not necessarily mean what you think is going to win. So I don't know. Everyone's got to stay tuned.
Oh, no, you're punching him in the arm. You're punching me in the face.
In the face. As hard as I can.
Yes.
Just give him a little tap. Yeah, no. Okay.
Yeah.
All in jest.
Knock him out.
All in jest. Knock him out. Just give him right in the kisser. All right, here we go. We're going to start with an award I've had a lot of difficult time with this year, and that is short film animated. These nominees are usually the easiest to find. The filmmakers put them out. You know, usually a few of them are on Netflix, or they're usually just out there on YouTube. I have only one of these right now is available for free online, and that's the only one I've seen, which is 95 Senses, which was really good and has this little twist in it where I went, oh my God, I didn't see that coming. Like it was really good. But that's the only one I've seen. The other nominees, Letter to a Pig, Our Uniform, Pachydermy, War is Over, inspired by the music of John and Yoko. these are frequently the ones I get wrong. These three short film ones are very hard to call every year. I don't know. One of my best years ever was the Slappy Slapperson year when I only missed two categories that year, and that was documentary short and live action short.
These are always tough because, yeah, like one, it's very hard to see them. They usually do a thing where they release in theaters the whole entire lineup of all the short films for animated and live action.
And that's out there now. Yeah. If you wanted to see every nominated short that way, that's always an option. Yes. So I should have said that. But as some of the other categories, every nominee is online. And part of me is just like, put it online. I you know. But anyway.
It would make more sense because if you're trying to get people, you should just make these things a little bit more available. Because it's only going to enhance the experience because you'll be able to actually, instead of just being like, oh, I don't know what these movies are, I've never seen them.
Right.
Instead, be like, oh, yeah, actually, I watched these. I would love to try to see these. I mean, just kind of going by the title, I like Letter to a Pig.
That's a great title. And then the John and Yoko one, you know, you get some recognition there. But Letter to a Pig is great.
Yep,
95 Senses was good. If you just type 95 Senses like into Google, I think it was available for free on like Documentary Plus. Only 11 minutes. It had a turn in it, like a dark turn. And I went, oh, okay, this got real. And I appreciated that, you know. But I would have watched them all. I don't, because the next category I've seen all but one. And, you know, they were a little easier to see. That short film live action. So here are the nominees. We have The After. I even talked about some of these in a recent episode. The After, which is David Aiello.
Yep.
And that's on Netflix. It's very easy to find. Invincible was, wow, the filmmaker put that on his Vimeo page. Highly recommend that. It's about a troubled kid who, it reminded me of some things I discussed on the Sleepers episode, actually. So I really recommend that. Night of Fortune was easy to find. That's about two guys who meet in a morgue. Red, White, and Blue is the only one I haven't seen. I tried to rent it on the filmmaker's website. It would not let me. But I think what's going to win is the Wes Anderson directed The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar. And I think that's probably the way it's going to go in terms of winner. You can watch that on Netflix very easily. And that's going to be funny because that's going to be, if that wins, that'll be the first Oscar Wes Anderson has.
Ah, that's funny. Well, yeah. Did you like it?
Oh, not really. Sorry. Of the ones I've seen, it's my least favorite. I've been saying all this on Letterboxd as I've been reviewing them. What he's doing lately, he's losing me a little bit. It's a total taste aesthetic thing. That's all. The hat on a hat, what Asteroid City was, it was like a play being adapted into like a TV show. And then The French Dispatch was like all these different story ideas. I guess it's the way he likes to tell stories now. He's been doing it kind of from the beginning. Even, I think I've gone on this jag before. Like, the Royal Tenenbaum starts, he's showing you the pages of the books, like, at the beginning of every chapter.
Yeah.
So that's like, okay, this is an adaptation of a fictional book. It's just too much stuff. It's too much mess. So he seems to be complicating his movies a great deal just in terms of structure, and I'm not sure why, and I don't think that really adds much to them. So it was okay, but I think my favorite on the list is Invincible. That's my personal favorite.
The After is getting quite a bit of billboard love here in LA. I see so many billboards for that one.
That's what I call like a one scene short. It has more than one scene, but it all comes down to its final scene. And you're like, okay, you spent 10 minutes building up to this. Can the actor pull it off? And to me, he does. But it's real raw, like real raw. No fancy stuff, just raw, like in the street, clinging to life type stuff. Yeah, not bad. I love hearing that, though, that it's got some billboard.
The Red, White, and Blue, that's... You think that's about like one of the flags that is in the world that have those colors?
That's about abortion.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, that's what it's about. Starring Brittany Snow, I believe. And I tried three times to rent that for $3.99 on the director's Vimeo page. And every time it just didn't work. And I went, okay, I guess you're the only one that doesn't want me to be able to see your short, but whatever.
Samsonite. I was way off.
Wow. Now, the next category, these are the ones that are usually the hardest to find. Usually, the only way to see the nominees for documentary short subject. is to go to that movie theater screening that you're talking about, which you can also rent them online, where you're renting like all five at once or seeing all five at once. All of these are available to see online for free. Most of them are on YouTube. We have the ABCs of book banning, very political about, you know, books that are being banned a lot in schools.
Oh yeah. It's a huge thing.
Yeah. Yeah. The Barber of Little Rock, really good documentary about equality and equity, which is a big topic right now. It's only 22 minutes. You can watch that on YouTube. I really liked it. Island in Between, which is about some guy living between on an island between China and Taiwan, I believe. The Last Repair Shop. This was pretty cool. This is about people who donate broken instruments, musical instruments. And then there's a group of people in Los Angeles who repair them for free and then give them to like inner city schools so that kids who would have never been able to have a trombone or whatever, or tuba. Yeah. That's what I was looking for. Have a tuba, can now have one because it's been repaired. So those are the ones that are like, you know, hitting kind of in the political zeitgeist. But then the last nominee, Nana and Wapo, is about, I think it's like 15 minutes on Hulu. I love this thing, man. This thing, it was fantastic. It was absolutely fantastic. It's a dude just filming his two grandmothers who have become best of friends. Because, you know, your two grandmothers wouldn't necessarily like become friends because it's like they're different families. They're friends. They live together. They're very old. Just adored it. It's just them. That's all it is. It's just that. It is the simplest film on it, and I loved it. I do not think it has any chance of winning because it has nothing to do with politics or anything, but it's just great. Please, people, go watch this. The one with the quote-unquote weirdest title, go watch that. I think it's on Disney Plus as well. So good.
I'm going to cry like right now, like just thinking of that.
One's dying. No one's doing. It's just a guy filming his two grandmothers in this bond they have. Sweet. And they're goofier than shit. And it's just that's it. There's nothing like shocking. It was just a beautiful, simple story. That's it. Beautiful.
All right. Beautiful. We got to move on. I'm going to lose it.
Visual effects. And here we get to our first narrative.
Okay.
Say it. Speak it.
This is tough. We've talked about it before, but I think it just bears repeating as much as we can, is that do we or do we not feel like visual effects is a controversial award now due to what CGI is versus what practical visual effects are? Because as you can see, once again, Oppenheimer is not in this category because, as you can see by all of these nominees, they are all CGI, every single one. Maybe, Napoleon is too, isn't it?
Yeah, Napoleon has CGI. The reason why Oppenheimer isn't here, it's for two reasons. One, if it would have gotten this nomination, it would have gotten 14 total, and that ties the record of the most nominations ever. So they just weren't ready to do that again. La La Land did that as well. They weren't ready to jump up and put Oppenheimer at that status. The second reason is the reason you're suggesting that I think best visual effects now to people means what has the best CGI, what has the most convincing CGI. And if you didn't spend as much as the big dogs, that usually lends itself a little better in your favor. Like Ex Machina won this, and that had the smallest budget of all its nominees. Yeah. So the nominees are The Creator with an $80 million budget, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 with a $250 million budget, Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1 with a budget of $291 million, Napoleon with a budget of $200 million, and Godzilla Minus 1 with a budget of $15 million. That is the big narrative here. Can the little Godzilla that could actually come and win this? And, you know, it was made for significantly cheaper. The visual effects in it are stunning. They were so believable. They were so good. They were better than the visual effects, in my opinion, in Mission Impossible, better than the visual effects in The Creator, which were really, really good. Don't get me wrong. But I would just love that narrative. If the small team from Godzilla Minus One comes in and takes this, it'll be fantastic.
I completely agree. I haven't seen The Creator, but I have heard that movie does look very good.
I don't know how it does.
I would feel because of my just complete CGI distaste.
Yeah, I get it.
Creator, Godzilla, or Mission Impossible. I think it's between those three.
Yeah, The Creator or Godzilla Minus One winning would be cool to me because The Creator is not, while it is more money than Godzilla, it's not it's still way less than something like Mission Impossible. So yeah, I'm hoping for Godzilla Minus One, and I think this might be the sort of kind of cute award that the Oscars do. They kind of do that and go, haha, look at this. You know, you don't need damn near $300 million to win this Oscar. You can do it with 15, and it's just great. All right, I'm going in order of our ballot here, so we're doing.
I know you are.
In whatever order they throw it to us, that means the next one's kind of a big one. Film editing. Here are the nominees: Anatomy of a Fall, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Thelma Schoonmaker, the most nominated editor in the history of editing. It's awesome. Love you, Thelma. Oppenheimer, edited by Jennifer Lame, and Poor Things. I think this is Oppenheimer's. I really hope so. And the reason why I said her name is that women don't often win in this category a lot, and it's just really, really cool. She's won a lot of precursor awards, and that movie is marvelously edited.
It's a lock, baby. It's a lock.
Oh, God. Here he goes. I don't know. I don't know about a lock. All right. Yeah, I don't know. Oh, Christ.
Yeah.
Why you got to do this to me? You're definitely not going to say this about every single Oppenheimer nominee. I know that.
No.
We're going to bunch up the next two. We're going to take production design and costume design. Only reason I'm grouping them up is because they are the exact same nominees. Whew. So here are the nominees for both: Barbie, Killers of the Flower Moon, Napoleon, Oppenheimer, Poor Things. Let's look at production design first. I'm grouping these together, and I'm grouping them together because I do not think Oppenheimer will win either of these. I think production design, you're looking at Barbie or Poor Things. I think costume design, both. So I think it's between both those. I think Barbie or Poor Things is going to split costume design, production design. I don't see Barbie necessarily winning costumes, but I know there are a lot of like bright costumes. I'm leaning more toward Poor Things, costumes, and production design, Barbie, but do they just make them both Poor Things? I don't know. But I think that's what you're looking at. I actually don't think Oppenheimer's in the conversation here.
I agree I don't think Oppenheimer is in the conversation for either one of these. However, uh-oh, Barbie's taken both of these.
Okay.
I'm saying it.
It'll be okay. So as we go, it'll be interesting to track if you think Poor Things will take anything. I think when it's all said and done, Poor Things could come out ahead. I could see Barbie winning one Oscar. I could see that as a reality. And we're going to get to the one. It's the one that's got a lot of discussion behind it in terms of how it will be presented. But if it takes another one, I could see it taking production design, because that whole thing was built. That whole set they built on a lot. It looked very good. No one complained about it.
It could definitely.
So I could see Barbie. I guess right now I would say Barbie takes production design, Poor Things takes costume design. But I would not be surprised if both are Barbie or both are Poor Things.
But it is between those two.
Okay, good. So we do agree on that. Here we go. Cinematography. El Conde. Insane movie I watched on Netflix. Vampire movie. It was absolutely bonkers. It's a comedy. Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Poor Things. I mean, bring it home. Hoyte Van Hoytema, Oppenheimer. He's one of our best living DPs. It needs to happen.
It's a lock, baby.
Listen, take it here, folks. Nick Dostal said it's a lock. All right. I hope you're right. I'm so cautious about this. Everything in my brain is like, you're out of your mind if you think something you love so much is going to be decorated so highly. That's what my brain tells me every day. No one else. Sorry, go ahead.
Just put your little hand in mine and follow me. I will guide you. It will be all right. Yeah. It's a lock.
It's a lock. This is another good one in conjunction with production design and costume design. We go to makeup and hairstyling. Our nominees are Golda, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Poor Things, Society of the Snow. There is a huge narrative here about one of the makeup artists, a guy named Kazu Hiro. He did the makeup for Maestro. He also did the makeup for The Darkest Hour. And this is a guy who did makeup for a while, became like really well known, but was never recognized for it. He was always appreciated, but never recognized for it. So he retired from this. And Gary Oldman basically calls him and he's like, I'm not going to play Winston Churchill unless you turn me into Winston Churchill. Unless you come out of retirement, I'm not doing the movie. And he's like, all right, whatever. So he does that. He wins an Oscar. The next movie he does, Bombshell, that also wins Best Makeup. This is his third movie since retirement, Maestro. I think Maestro is actually going to be an Oscar winner. I think it's going to take this. I think we're going to have a little bit of Bohemian Rhapsody best editing here when the editing was getting mocked relentlessly and mercilessly in the press. And then it went on to win, just as the nose was mocked relentlessly and mercilessly. I think we see a Maestro win here.
You know, so what you're basically saying is that the nose plays.
The nose is going to play. I think the nose is going to play all the way to the stage. I do.
I agree with all of this. And I think I also don't disagree if it wins, because
I concur.
Of all of the things that we've said about Maestro, one of the things that did not bother me at all was the nose. I think it's very jarring when you're watching the trailer, because you know Bradley Cooper. And mm-hmm. So whenever you see it, you're like, oh, wow, that's a hell of a nose. And you get made fun of. It's just, oh, you know, all this and that. But like, as soon as you see him in the movie and it starts, it never once distracted me. It never once took me out. I never once was like, God, look at that thing. That's ridiculous. I thought it looked great the entire time. I thought the makeup of that movie was quite good.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with the makeup at all. My problems that wasn't even where my problems began or ended. It was never on my scale of problems with that film. So, but I do think that's two things here. I don't think Oppenheimer is going to win this. And I do think Maestro will be, you know, an Academy Award winner. Just as A Star is Born won one Oscar for best song, I think Maestro is going to win a single Oscar.
Now, really quick, as we wrap up this one, if Maestro isn't going to win this one, what would come in next?
Probably Poor Things to me for Willem Dafoe. Oppenheimer does a lot of makeup in movies is very subtle. Like what he had to do to Carey Mulligan in the end of that film, that it was really good makeup. I absolutely hated that plot device, but it was really good makeup. Oppenheimer is doing subtle makeup throughout. And then for, you know, 45 seconds, it jumps in the end and everyone looks really old. But something like Poor Things, what's on Willem Dafoe or just, you know, on everyone. I think there is also a wave that happens here where production design, costume design, makeup, poor things, that could happen. I don't think it's going to go that way, but if it does, it's not surprising. That wave that All Quiet got on last year, that's what threw me off, because last year my ballot, I got a little too close to the awards, and I kept, like, even when I uploaded this episode, I kept like interjecting with, oh, there's an update. And most of those updates didn't end up winning. So I'm definitely taking like a step back and not like reading everything this year. I'm kind of just going off with my gut with a lot of these things, but that wave can happen. We witnessed it in real time last year where that fucking movie won four in a row. And
it's
like,
crazy.
What is going on? Like, this is okay. Like, I mean, God, that movie was fine, but if you rewatch Babylon now, you're like, fucking All Quiet won best score. It's like three notes. They're awesome notes, but it's like three notes. Like, anyway, second place, yes, is Poor Things. Keep that second place thing in mind. I have that for a few other categories. Just like tossing it out there. What do you think second place would be? I like doing that. Oh. Just spitballing. We'll never know.
Yeah, I'll toss it.
Oh, you'll toss it. Fucker. Best sound. I can't believe it's taken me this long to get to my favorite narrative. One of my favorite narratives of the year. Best sound. Here we go.
This is our historic. This is the What Are You Watching Oscar Award. This is our favorite. We've touted this.
We have, but oh man, this goes so much deeper than that.
Talk to me. How deep does it go?
Here are the nominees. The Creator, Maestro, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, Part One, Oppenheimer, The Zone of Interest. I didn't list the names of the nominees. Well, first of all, I think this is between Oppenheimer, who I do hope wins, but The Zone of Interest, the sound is a huge part of that. It's been in the discussion a lot. So see that. Why I'm so excited is that my main man, Kevin O'Connell, is back. He's nominated for Oppenheimer. I love this guy. A famous sound mixer, famous to me, who infamously lost like 20 times, lost this award 20 fucking times. And in 2016, when he was nominated for Hacksaw Ridge, if he lost that award, he was going to be the biggest loser in Oscar history. The biggest living loser in Oscar history. And this was a narrative. And then I latched onto the guy. I've even talked about this on the podcast this Oscar season, so I apologize for repeating myself. And then I wrote an article just about how many times this guy's lost, and he should have at least a few. And then he won that year, and it's so good. Oh. It's such a good speech. He's so emotional on stage, and it's great. Like, they gave him one, and then I missed the boat. I had no idea he did the sound for Tenet, there's a lot of people who are nominated for each movie, but he did the sound for Tenet, and I was like, oh. And then when I looked, I went, wait, he's nominated and could likely win for Oppenheimer? Kevin O'Connell, I love you. Ah, just great. If Zone of Interest wins, I'll be a little like, I mean, it deserves to win because it was really good. But then, you know, it's Kevin O'Connell, man. I can't turn my back on Kev.
Well, you can't turn your back on Oppenheimer.
Damn right.
This is an interesting one because my pick is not, as we said, our picks are not rock solid. But I do have a pick for this as of right now. And it is going towards a movie I haven't even seen.
Fair.
So I am actually saying that the Zone of Interest is going to win this one. Just because of not only conversations you and I have had, but everything that I'm seeing about the way that sound is in this movie, it sounds like that it is one of the more unique uses of sound that in recent memory. I mean, having seen Oppenheimer, I would say without a shadow of a doubt that the award should go to that. But based off of just how unique this movie is, of the Zone of Interest, I think this has a real shot. Because this is the sneak-in movie of the Oscars, this thing just kind of came in, and it's in some pretty high-class, powerful categories that because I think Oppenheimer is going to take so much,
mm-hmm.
I think this is one of the ones where Zone of Interest is going to really grab it.
This is the first time in this episode we've said the Zone of Interest. Now, this movie is going to win one Oscar. We're going to get to it. It's going to win at least one. But this, I think more than any movie, has been making the biggest sneaky play behind the scenes since nominations were announced. And it has been number one on Letterboxd for a long time, for weeks. And that means number one in terms of how many people are logging it and watching it. So there was this huge surge. Steven Spielberg released a statement saying he thought it was the best Holocaust movie that's been made since his own. That's a big deal.
That's a big deal, but that's a little...
Well, it's Steve. You know. Come on. Steve.
Yeah, it's Steve.
If anyone wants a great video, go watch Steven Spielberg watching the announcement of the 1975 Oscars when he fails to get a Best Director nomination for Jaws. He throws a little hissy fit, and it's just so cute. It's so cute. Go watch that, folks.
It's so cute.
Anyway, what are we talking about? We're talking about sound. The difference here is that the sound in Oppenheimer is so propulsive, bombastic.
Yeah.
It's enhancing everything. Those quick flashes when he's seeing fucking neurons. It's so intense, and it's the loudest of the sound here. You know, it's the biggest. Zone of Interest is like a character. It's like an atmospheric thing where it is putting you in the world, and you don't realize the importance until you're in the midst of the movie, and you're like, oh, okay. But also, I fear that in some of the ways I've described it, it is not like the horror. It's not that. This is a PG-13 movie.
The
subtlety is what helps reinforce how, you know, how much of a command the sound has on the movie. This isn't, a lot of people have seen the movie by now, but the movie opens like, you'll know that sound is going to be a big part of it because it's a different sort of opening. It's a very, very different sort of movie. I cannot believe it has taken off this way, and people are so stunned by it. My dad was floored by it. He absolutely loved it. He said he thought it was the most important movie of the year. He thought it was stunning. It's just riveting. It's such a good movie. So that could win here. That could win, or it could be Oppenheimer. We'll see. It's between those two, certainly.
Don't forget about Maestro.
Well, I didn't forget, but I mean, it's there. I didn't forget. I don't know. And when you said you're voting for something that you haven't seen, keep in mind that there's about 10,000 people who vote for the Oscars. And if you all think that they watch every single nominee, that ain't the way this works. It's just not. It's largely what is on the most billboards in LA. Like, this stuff does matter, I promise. Like, it should, because it's kind of silly, but it does. The promotion, that's why we're talking about the narratives. And Jonathan Glazer, the director of Zone of Interest, has been taking I think his name is Johnny Brune. And the fact that I even know the guy's name, the sound mixer's name, says something because he's been taking him on a lot of interviews. I'm going to double check to see if that's his name. Johnny Brune. Okay, but the fact that I even knew that is like, that's we don't know many sound mixers' names.
Yeah.
I do know Kevin O'Connell's name.
Yes, you too.
Best believe. Oh, Kevin O'Connell, I love you. Good luck. Best believe.
Good luck to, yes, good luck to both. I think that's, I mean, we've always said this is our favorite category, and it's it always seems to kind of be a big champion for what I think is one of the unsung aspects of movies that people don't really take into consideration a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Here we go. This is the award that Barbie is winning. Original song. The Fire Inside from Flamin' Hot. I'm Just Ken from Barbie.
Yes.
To be performed on stage by Ryan Gosling. It Never Went Away from American Symphony. Wuhazi, a song for my people. Killers of the Flower Moon. And What Was I Made For by Billie Eilish. Barbie. Keep in mind, if I'm Just Ken wins, it's not like that Oscar goes to Ryan Gosling. That Oscar goes to Mark Ronson. The Oscar for What Was I Made For will go to Billie Eilish. I just don't think she needs to win again so soon. She just won this. She just won original song. I say give it to I'm Just Ken. It's definitely between those two. We're going to see, but I'm Just Ken would be... They do like to get cute here. This is one category that the Oscars have gone out of their way to be non-stuffy for a while. Like, It's Hard Out Here for a Pimp. Lose Yourself by Eminem. Like, they can do it to, they can give it to fun songs sometimes, but we don't need, I don't think we need two Billie Eilish Oscars in as many years. So I'm Just Ken. I would love it. And that way Barbie secures an Oscar win.
Well, it's going to be one of these two.
Yeah.
I actually think it's going to go the other way.
You think it'll go to Billie?
I think it's going to go to Billie.
All right, whatever.
I mean, it's a better song.
Better doesn't... Okay, well, hey, I have no idea. I'm not, like, on my high horse about either song here. I like to spread the wealth a little bit. I don't think she needs two in, 3 years or something.
No, I get it.
But we do agree that Barbie will win an Oscar.
Yes.
At the very least, it'll win one, and it's here. Yeah.
Yes. And like we've said before, I've loved Gosling's facial expressions leading up to this.
I know. He's like, how does this keep winning? All right, original score, Hellboy, American Fiction, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer, Poor Things. This should absolutely be Oppenheimer's, that the score was so highly rated on Spotify. Like, it was like one of the most listened to albums of the year, just in general. The only thing that scares me here is that Ludwig Göransson already has an Oscar. He won Best Score for Black Panther, and I don't know if that's going to matter, but... Our guy Justin Horowitz won two Oscars for La La Land, and they were like, fuck you, buddy, for his Babylon score. So, I don't know.
It's a lock.
Here he goes, folks. It's a lock. Oppenheimer. All right, take it to the bank. That's what he says. You better be right. I'm just going to be so defeated if... Oh, my God. Anyway. All right, here we go. This is another lock. International feature film. El Capitano, Perfect Days, Society of the Snow, The Teacher's Lounge, The Zone of Interest, with France making the very dumb decision to put The Taste of Things as their nominee and that failing to get a nomination. If they would have put Anatomy of a Fall here, we would have a great duking out here between Anatomy of the Fall and The Zone of Interest. It would make this category so compelling because... These are two huge foreign language nominees that have crossed over this year. They are hugely popular. The movies since nominations have been getting so much press, and I love it. They're both great films. Anatomy of a Fall should be here because then I would be telling everyone, I do not know what's going to win this. But as it is now, Jonathan Glazer is going to win his first Oscar for The Zone of Interest, and it's very, very well deserved. And if you're wondering why, it's from United Kingdom, why is it an international feature film? None of the movies in English. It's all in German. It's not. That's why.
Yes, I agree. But also, Society of the Snow is also, I think, that movie is definitely, that's been regarded a lot.
That's true. Documentary feature. We have Bobby Wine, The People's President, The Eternal Memory, Four Daughters, To Kill a Tiger, 20 Days, and Maripool. Okay. I've seen one of these.
Oh, you've seen one? Oh, you really? You are the documentary guy.
Well, we're gonna open this up a little bit. I've had something on my mind. Like genuinely. And a lot of these are, you can find them, you can rent them, they're online. 20 Days in Mariupol is on YouTube for free via PBS's YouTube channel. This is about the first 20 days of the war in Ukraine that's going on right now. And I'm watching it. I did not know what it was going to be about, and I'm watching it. And in minute 17, I see what is, to my recollection, the most horrific thing I've ever seen, period. In a movie, in the news, on TV, and it was a four-year-old child failing to be resuscitated by a doctor. And I was looking at it, and my brain did a thing where I thought I was looking at like a CPR dummy that they practice on. I like shook it out, and I was like, oh, I just watched a four-year-old boy die. Oh, what? Okay. Wow, I didn't know where this is going. That was in minute 17. It gets so much worse. It just gets so much worse. So my question is, and this is, it's a documentary, okay? They give a little, little one-sentence warning before it started. But the next day, and I promise I'm going to land the plane here. The next day on Reddit, I saw someone post and say, I'm 18 years old. My mom is into like extremist cinema. I'm getting into extremist cinema, but I'm wondering if I'm actually ready for Irreversible. Like, how bad is this? I do like this, but my mom's telling me, you know, you're 18 now. This one's tough. So like, if you do like go proceed with caution, but they're just asking Reddit in general, Irreversible's like rough. And it is, we've done a whole podcast on Gaspar and Away. We've done it, but like, everything in Irreversible is fake. Everything in Irreversible is staged. The actors are smoking cigarettes and drinking coffee and watching their playback on monitors. Monica Bellucci's going, yeah, wow, it's so brutal. I think we can push it harder for this take. They're joking around. It's all staged. It's all talked about. There ain't no second takes in 20 Days in Mariupol. There ain't no do-overs. There's no laughing and talking about how like authentic this looks. This is fucking real. I talked about Night and Fog recently on this podcast, where it just shows you a picture and you're seeing a bucket of heads and their bodies are right there. And you're like, oh, this is not like some, I'm not watching Schindler's List where this is fake. Those are actually really heads that were attached to that body like 30 seconds ago. Okay. So that my question is, I'm not sure to be insensitive, I'm not sure to be anything, but like, if someone is open to a movie like Irreversible, I'm not talking about mass audiences, I'm talking about that. And Irreversible is a very difficult movie to find. You can't rent it anywhere for a price. It's hard to track down. But 20 Days in Mariupol is for free on PBS's YouTube channel. Like, what the fuck is this? I mean, like, how, like, it's like we're desensitized to actual war, to actual violence, and we're fucking, like, we'll lose it over violence in a movie. And I'm not saying, of course I'm saying the stuff in Irreversible is bad. I'm just using that as an example. I could be using any other shocking movie. But do you see the point I'm getting at, where I was like, I think anyone, my personal opinion, any human being who watches 20 Days in Mariupol and makes it through, you can, I can't fathom that you wouldn't be able to handle any other movie. Maybe that's a naive opinion for me to take because Irreversible has a sexual assault in it. So that's why it could be extremely difficult for people to watch that film. I get it. But my overall point is, in the press or in the culture writ large, sometimes we're so critical about, oh, this horrific violence, what's it teaching us? But like, there's real life going on. That's what I'm saying. There's real life shit going on. You can watch it for free on PBS's YouTube. And it's like, I don't know. I don't know my overall point. I guess I wish more people were like this impassioned about this documentary or what we're seeing on it and stop complaining about like on-screen violence that, you know, was scripted and agreed upon. That's all. I don't know. Whatever. Rant on, I guess.
No, I understand your point almost in a counterpoint to what you're saying is that I think what they're trying, what I'm assuming that they're trying to do is with something like this is how do we actually get out into the world what's really happening here? And the only way we can do it is just by making a movie and showing it. And I think PBS might be like, listen, we're just trying to do our best as what is the truth?
Mm-hmm.
Here it is. This is a document.
And I really respect them for that. I hope it's clear that yeah. I'm not talking. I really respect this documentary. I'm just using the documentary as a discussion point.
Yeah, absolutely.
I suppose what I'm saying is 2023, in terms of movie outrage, was dominated by one fucking thing, and that was Florence Pugh's breasts in Oppenheimer yeah. for like 10 seconds. I heard about it nonstop. I'm still hearing about it. I wish 1/10 of that outrage of, oh my God, how was this consensual sex scene in an R-rated movie? I wish 1/10 of that outrage could go to, holy fuck, have you seen 20 Days in Maripol? This shit's actually yeah. happening. But it doesn't. And of course it's not going to. Of course it's not. I don't even know my overall point, but my eyes were just open watching this doc, and I've seen horrific documentaries since I got into movies. Like I was watching Hearts and Minds, the Vietnam War documentary that won in 1973. I saw that so young, and you see things in that they would not be allowed to put into Platoon or The Deer Hunter. Or if they were in that, you'd be like, well, that's not real life. And then you see it and you go, oh my God, like I just saw that happen. So I respect when documentaries do this, but I just think our pop culture outrage is misguided in so many ways, and usually is. And I don't know. I just wish attention could be focused on other things. That's all.
You're 100% right. That's all. I mean, you're talking about such a bigger problem.
It is. It's way bigger than this movie yeah. or than this awards. I know. It's like I pitched this to Allie last night and she finally got it because she's always wondered how the hell, like, why are you in such like extreme, why do you like such extremist cinema sometimes? It's not like this yeah. is the only thing I'm watching, but like, how can you like that? And I gave her this example and she was like, I've never thought about that. That's actually a good point. Because I said, there's nothing in that documentary that's worse than what's in Irreversible or X movie. But anyway, we're getting, yes, it's a, and she said, this is like, this could be its own podcast topic.
Oh
like,
my
like,
God.
For like yeah. an entire show, you know, but anyway, all right. I do think that movie will win. But noting that after I watched that, I was like, I don't know if I can, all right, well, let me see what these are about. And I read the log line for To Kill a Tiger. And it's like, after a man's daughter is gang raped, I went, all right, forget it.
God.
I can't do it. I was like, I can't. Respect to all you nominees, but I mean, this shit is, you know, I even said in my letterbox review, I can watch fictionalized violence, pretty much anything. I can stomach it if it is fictionalized. It's in a narrative fictionalized movie, but I am not cut out for the content in 20 Days in Maripol. That's what I said. I was like, good on you for if you guys can stomach this. I don't have the stomach for this. I can't watch little kids just dying like over and over and over. It's, you know, I quit.
How you want to move on from this one?
Yes, I do. I was trying to find a funny thing to say. Here we go. We're going to go right to that topic. I am glad. Sometimes we work stuff out on this. We got something to say. That's all. I'm not even making big statement. I just thought it was an interesting conversation. That's all. Because I do think that'll win. I do think that movie will win. And it ain't easy. That's all I'm saying.
I'm glad you brought it up. Because I think that, you know, I mean, far be it for us two guys on a movie podcast to talk about, like, you know, try to figure out what's wrong with the world.
Yeah,
but
seriously.
This is something that is truly wrong with our society and our culture right now. And I don't know what the fix is. It's really tough. But I think even just pointing it out in this way, it's something.
Yeah.
It's something.
All right. Changing gears. Best animated feature. The Boy and the Heron. Elemental. Nimona. Robot Dreams. Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. This is interesting. I think we have a two-way race here. I think we have The Boy and the Heron versus Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. What makes it interesting is that Miyazaki, who is the director of The Boy and the Heron, he won for Spirited Away years ago, but then the first Spider-Man won a few years ago. So it's they both have an Oscar, so which one will it go to? I don't really know here. I've seen the Spider-Man film. I've not seen The Boy and the Heron. I know people love that man's movies. They really do.
Yep.
You know, but I think a lot more people have seen Across the Spider-Verse. So will that, you know, or are they like, we already gave it to the first one. I don't know. It's an interesting thing. It is a bit of a toss-up. I don't really know what's going to pull away here.
I think it's going to be one of them too. And if I had to put my stamp on it, I think I'm going with the Boy and the Heron.
I think it's fair. It's a fair guess.
It would be, yeah. So I guess I'm leading with my heart on this one as opposed to what I think. I think it is between the Boy and the Heron and Spider-Man, but I think it would be very cool if Boy and the Heron took this one.
I agree. And he, you know, because I don't follow animated movies as closely, I know he's like retired once or twice and they come back and done a movie. So they like, that's a narrative that they like. I personally was not the biggest fan of Across the Spider-Verse because I'm not a fan of like the serialization of movies. I'm going to talk about this in my What Are You Watching recommendation a little bit. Like, I didn't know going into that movie that they already had a part three planned. So that it's not a spoiler. Like, that movie ends with them being like building up to this huge fight. And then it just doesn't happen. They're like, see you next time. And I was like, what the fuck? I didn't know that was going to happen.
I was so upset.
Oh, see, I didn't know you'd seen it. Okay, so you watch it.
Yeah.
Dude, I was pissed. Like, I went to the theater to see that. I was pissed. Yeah. I was like, what?
And I'll be honest, I really liked the first one. I really liked
the
first one.
I like that one much better, the first one. Yeah.
But I, the whole entire time I was watching this one, I thought that the other character was a much more interesting story to follow that we didn't see, like the girl.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it wasn't bad. I just kept thinking, I'm like, I think what's going on the other side of things is more interesting. And then we get the cliffhanger ending that I didn't know about either. And I go, this movie was like 2.5 hours.
It was not a short movie. It's not like it was an hour, 40 minutes. Like, you took us there. Like, I'm not a fan of that in really any genre. I don't, it just rubs me the wrong way, but you know,
but
so maybe some voters will be like, we'll just wait till the third one comes out and we'll give that animated feature. I don't know.
Maybe, but really quick as we move on, just because I know that you are, this is not your favorite category because it's not your favorite genre of film, but I did hear from a little bird, a big bird, a big tall idiot bird named Dan.
Banana Dan.
Banana Dan. That you really liked Robot Dreams? Is this fact?
We're okay. If you're asking now, thanks for spoiling my What Are You Watching recommendation. An asshole. I'm doing one of the things where I'm gonna talk about a few movies. So my movie related to this episode is Pablo Berger's Robot Dreams, which Banana Dan, friend of the pod Dan, did watch and was trying to sell me on it, as he often does with animation. There's nothing wrong with the animated movies that you all love. You all love these movies and talk about them. You're not wrong. There is an emotional block within me that I can't fully connect. And that's like, I don't know. It's just the way I am. Noting that Dan's selling point, he said, Robot Dreams is wordless. It is dialogue free. And I went, oh, that's really interesting to me. Like, there's no narrator? And he's like, no. So I watched it. This movie's absolutely fucking delightful. It's fucking delightful. I really liked it. It was like moving along. The last 15 minutes, I found to be so moving. I was stunned. I was just stunned, all for its simplicity. It had a little melancholic streak to it that I don't see a lot of animated movies doing a lot, that was very genuine and earnest. I mean, it's about a dog and a robot. And I was like, it was really good. And one of the reasons why I liked it so much is that it has no chance at winning this particular Oscar. But wow, I really, really enjoyed it. The gimmick of not having any dialogue really, really works. It is funny at times. It is cute at times. And there was like this, there was just something that happened that kicked off this like kind of this last 15 minutes. And it was so simple. There's this one scene of the dog and a robot like having a picnic on a park bench. And they just took it took a second, like a little beat to, they were passing each other sandwiches and they just locked eyes and smiled at each other. And what they're communicating is, it's just really nice to be out here with you, man. And I was like,
yeah, that's cool.
Fuck, that was like really, really just beautiful and like just so simple. And that's all it was communicating. Like, this is like, I'm really glad that we're doing this. Like, I really enjoy being your friend. So yeah, Robot Dreams would definitely be my vote if I voted for the Oscars to win that. I really liked it and highly recommend. I know it's going to be coming out wider soon. But yeah, that was going to be my what are you watching recommendation. It's just good. It was a good movie. I'll tell it to you straight. If I like something, animated or not, I'll tell you.
Well, that's special, as you like to say. That's a special.
Good discussion. We opened up animated feature and documentary feature in ways that I didn't anticipate. I love that. And we got the big eight, baby.
This is it.
We're going to start with what I actually think. No bullshit. I actually think this is the most interesting category of the night. And here's why. I'm talking about adapted screenplay. Your nominees are American Fiction, Barbie, Oppenheimer, Poor Things, The Zone of Interest, Dead Serious. I think any five of these could win. I'm not kidding. I think any five of these actually have a decent shot to take it. With American Fiction, Cord, Jefferson, just, you know, the movie's been doing well. He won Best Screenplay at the Independent Spirit Awards, which, remember when they used to like promote those? They used to always be the day before the Oscars. I didn't even know the things aired. I found out the morning after and I was like, what? Those were last night? Like, I pay attention to this stuff, people. Like, I follow this shit. I didn't even know that. I text you and I was like, what the fuck? These were last night? How did I not know this? I had no idea. So I watched them right away, but I was pissed that I didn't know they were on.
How was the show? Because that's the one I haven't seen.
Pretty good. You know, it's a good show. I actually like the BAFTAs a lot. If all the BAFTA winners ended up being the Oscar winners, I'd be like, hey, that's okay. Sometimes those can be hit or miss. Cord Jefferson's speech for Best Screenplay was so good. He had a line. His speech shook me to my core because he had a line in it that said, you know, happiness has always been elusive for me. But this award and, you know, everyone's kind of recognition is making me feel just really good. And I was like, wow, what a thing to admit that like happiness is hard for you to achieve when like you're able to, you know, get this movie out there. I think that could win. I think Noah Baumbach and Greta Gerwig, especially with her not being nominated for director, could mean it has a big chance at winning this for Barbie. Oppenheimer is actually the one I think has like the least likely chance to win because I you know, directing and picture is coming up. I don't know. Will they give it to Oppenheimer? Poor Things is a really good chance to award that film if it doesn't get anywhere else. And Tony McNamara, who also wrote The Favorite, he's a very beloved writer. And The Zone of Interest is a movie a lot of people are seeing and a lot of people are talking about, and that is going to win international feature film. So it's pretty even money between all five of these nominees. And I don't really know what to say right now is going to win. I don't really know. It's a fun category. That's all.
It's a very fun category. And I think all the points that you made are exactly right. However, you know what I'm about to say.
You really think it? You think he's going to win screenplay?
I absolutely do.
Well, we've talked about 100%. This. We didn't even think it was going to be nominated.
There's no way it wasn't going to be nominated. There's been talk about this screenplay just because of how it's unique in the
first person.
First person. And because he took that whole entire book and condensed it into what we see.
That is the feat. No As way. Someone who read both, like I literally read both. I listened to the audiobook of American Prometheus, but then bought that fucker and actually read it. And it is like as big as a phone book. And then seeing what pieces he took, it is an accomplishment. But I don't know. But no one will be surprised if that's the one he loses. If Christopher Nolan loses an Oscar that night and it's adapted screenplay, people like, if I'll tell you what, I'll be nervous if he wins that award on the night of. I'm going to, because adapted screenplay will be before director picture. And you will hear me be like, oh my God, are they going to give him this and then knock him director? Oh my God. Oh my God. I don't know. So, but you think it's a lock. I cannot share in that enthusiasm. I would love if it's Oppenheimer, but I don't know. I don't know. I see a good like 3 or 4 way split here. Anything could win this.
Anything could. I'll say this. If in my opinion, if Oppenheimer doesn't win this, and I can't believe my justification. It's so weird. I think it would go to The Zone of Interest.
No, that's a good. I think that is. I think that might be in first place right now. I do. But
it's the only one that makes me not think it's a lock.
Well, and it's the only one. It's the only movie here that is not at all based on the dialogue. Zone of Interest is much. I mean, they're very rarely are they telling you like what the things you want them to be talking about. Like, what the hell? You live near Auschwitz? They're not talking about this shit. They're talking about, you know.
Yeah.
It's, or if they are talking about their work at Auschwitz, it's very matter of fact and banal. That's what the movie's about, the banality of evil.
And because also, like, it's the complete opposite of Oppenheimer, where Oppenheimer is all dialogue.
Right.
And it sounds right. like the zone of interest is the dialogue is not the star of what makes that a good screenplay. It's
a circumstance.
Yeah. And then executing that on paper
yeah.
and then translating that to film. I suppose it just kind of goes to the school of thought as to what is a good screenplay. But it's also one of those things where this could be one where it's like we want to give the zone of interest a lot of love. This is a category to give it that opportunity. But other than that, I think Oppenheimer is taking it.
How to talk about your Oscar ballot is tough because it's like, will Oppenheimer just do some sweep and win a bunch? We obviously don't think it's going to win everything it's nominated for. Or will they spread the wealth a little bit? Like, will the Poor Things train keep going? It is like production design, costume design. I doubt it wins makeup, but let's just call it out there. Makeup, adapted screenplay. Yeah. Now we're at four, and that's a wave. That's what All Quiet did. So again, I don't think that will happen, but that can happen. The mini wave, Dune, was not the best picture winner because that went to Coda, which everyone remembers and everyone talks about all the time. Dune won 6 Oscars that night. That was the biggest winner of the night. That was the wave that it was on. And it was like, oh man. So it can happen, but this could also be a year where, Zone of Interest gets 2, Poor Things gets 1, Oppenheimer gets blank. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, there's another one that we're finally going to talk about coming up that we haven't really had a chance to talk about, an original screenplay, because I think this is a 3-way race with a pretty newly emerged frontrunner. Here are the 5 nominees: Anatomy of a Fall, The Holdovers, Maestro, May December, Past Lives. Here's the narrative. Justine Triet and Arthur Harari, who are partners, I think they are going to, they could very well join the ranks of Claude Lelouch, Pedro Almodovar, and Bong Joon-ho as people who have won the Oscar for Best Original Screenplay for writing a film that is not in the English language. That is an extremely rare thing to happen. I also think The Holdovers and Past Lives are circling and could steal easily. So we're talking about sharing the wealth. The Holdovers is going to win an Oscar, which we're going to get to shortly. That is winning an Oscar.
Yes.
So do they go, that's fine, we'll just give it that one Oscar. And now The Holdovers is an Oscar winner, just like we're going to give him best makeup to Maestro. So that's an Oscar winner. Or are they like, no, we're going to give it that award, but we're also going to give Holdover screenplay because like we really liked it. That's what I mean. Like, I don't know. Or Past Lives didn't get a lot of love elsewhere. This is the only chance to give it an award. It's not going to win Best Picture. This is it. So do you do that? Or do you just go with Anatomy of a Fall? I think it is between those three, and it's a tough call. It's a tough call.
It's not a tough call. Because you know why?
What's doing it? Oppenheimer's not nominated.
I know it's not. No, this is Anatomy of a Fall all the way.
You think?
All the way.
You think?
100%.
Talk to me.
Because.
I want to hear.
Because it's not nominated for anything else that it can win. I mean, it's nominated for film editing. But I don't think anything's beating Oppenheimer for that. It's not in the international feature film category, as you pointed out in that conversation. It's not going to take Best Picture. So that movie has gotten so much love and attention this whole entire awards season. This is the only thing that it can win.
You're right.
And it's that good.
I have not considered this. You're absolutely right. This is probably the only thing that's going to win. And as you're talking, it's making me even more nervous about a few of the awards we're getting to and this film's chances, because this film is very buzzed about and they have run a perfect campaign because somewhere someone along the way said, hey, our movie's super serious, like dead serious. Let's do the funny campaign. We're going to be the funny people. So Justin Trier is getting up there telling jokes on stage. They're bringing the dog from the movie to like the press events. Like they're doing the funny campaign, the self-deprecating one. Okay, you sold me. You convinced me. So, okay, I like that. Anatomy of a Fall to win this. And then that would be the only Anatomy of a Fall win, which makes me nervous because I see that movie winning more than one potentially. Yeah. Okay, so look for that there. And that's, again, that's rare. It is rare for a foreign film to win best screenplay. Here we go.
Here we go, baby.
Best Supporting Actor, Sterling K. Brown, American Fiction. Robert De Niro, Killers of the Flower Moon. Robert Downey Jr., Oppenheimer. Ryan Gosling, Barbie. Mark Ruffalo, Poor Things. It seems that everyone is convinced that Robert Downey Jr. is going to win. I suppose I can agree. I will say that I was somewhat dumbfounded by his SAG speech, because I've said on this podcast, as it relates to his campaign, I would like to see him practicing a little more humility. And the first thing he says when he gets on stage is, "Why does everything seem to be going my way?" And I was hoping there was going to be like a joke to make fun of himself at the end of that. And there wasn't. And I went, "Oh, okay. So there's just, I see what you're doing. You're just being yourself." And like, I expected a little humility and a little gratitude. I'm not really seeing it. But as I was reminded very recently, I had completely lost sight of this, which is dumb. This man has made that town billions of dollars for Iron Man, for doing the Tony Stark thing, for basically carrying the MCU for those years. And this is their way to kind of give back. So while I could see in a very radical world, Mark Ruffalo steal, and if you think I'm crazy, I'm not, because this has happened. I guess, yeah, Robert Downey Jr. is going to win. But the lack of humility has surprised me. I know that's not what he's known for. I know that, but it has surprised me. Just going up there being like, this is mine. I deserve this. It's about time. At least that's what I'm reading from it. And traditionally, the Oscars don't like that. And I'm just saying, Sylvester Stallone wins the Golden Globe, does not thank Ryan Coogler, does not thank Michael B. Jordan. That dominates the press. And that man loses an Oscar to someone I'm sure Sylvester Stallone has never heard of, Mark Rylance. I bet that was he's probably like, who's that? And I mean, this stuff happens. Sly did not win the Screen Actors Guild as Downey did. So it's not a one-to-one, but I'm just saying, like, I've been following the Oscars very, very close for decades. There are a few, I don't want to say certainties, but there are a few trends, and one thing they do not like is this thing. But so I do, long way of saying, I do think he'll take it. I already know what you're going to say. It's a lock, but I'm just saying it's been a bit surprising, I guess. I don't know. But he has had a good sense of humor. He's been joking around with Christopher Nolan. I think he's actually brought Nolan out of his shell a little bit, like on this award circuit, which has helped him a lot. So he's done good. I expected a little more humility. That's all. Just like a little bit. Just a little bit.
It's just not who that guy is.
It's not who he is. I know. You're right. Just that. You're right.
I do think it is a lock, but I do hear what you're saying. Absolutely. Because you just get too much of that. And if you just get like enough people to kind of be like, yeah, you had it, but you know, I mean, you just talk too much shit. But I also think that he's been doing this his whole entire career. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like one of those things where you're hiding in plain sight. Like no one, you can do like the Jane Campion thing where you're not an outlandish, outspoken person, and then you fuck up once on the campaign trail and you just ruin all your chances.
Yeah.
Sylvester Stallone, same thing. Like that guy's always given respect to people.
True.
But this guy, his whole entire career has been shooting his mouth off. So it's sort of like, well, what do you expect him to do? And, you know, he does have all of that clout to back him up.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I also think if this doesn't go that way and they do kind of like punish him for him being him, then I think it is Ruffalo that sneaks in here and gets it. And honestly, I would love that.
Just so because
I loved Mark Ruffalo in this movie. Though I do think and I do hope that Robert Downey Jr. wins, because he just did an unbelievable job.
Yeah. And I think I'm probably making too much of a thing. I guess my prediction is that if they give him this, it will be, and this I know, it will be extremely difficult for that man to be nominated, let alone win again, because they're going to be like, we did it for you, buddy. All right, now leave us alone. Go away. I mean, he could do something that is even better than his Oppenheimer performance next, but I don't think he'll be recognized for it, because I think I think people are going to want a little break. We'll see. Yeah, if someone was to steal, Mark Ruffalo stealing would be amazing. And they're friends. So, you know, it's Hulk and Iron Man duking it out. So I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
This happens once a year. Our next category, we typically get a lock in an acting category once a year. It's difficult to tell what it's going to be, even when the movies come out. But for some reason, the wave starts and it's just not going to break. And that's what it's going to be.
Yep.
And Davine Joy Randolph is going to win Best Supporting Actress for The Holdovers without breaking a sweat. Who knows why this stuff happens? I don't know. It's a narrative. It's an arc. It just cements itself. Like Kiwi Kwan last year, that dude would not have been able to lose. He could have there's nothing he could have done to lose. Virtually nothing. Nothing. He won everything. Nothing. She's won everything. It happens. Like I said, usually happens once a year. Her fellow nominees are Emily Blunt, Oppenheimer, Danielle Brooks, The Color Purple, America Ferrera, Barbie, Jodie Foster, Nyad. So my kind of fun question here, since I think this one is so obvious, is who do you genuinely think is in second place if they actually showed us the nominees? I actually think it's America. I think it's America Ferrera is probably in second place here, but I don't know. But I do think that.
Like, if I had to pick a performance that was on here, I really like Jodie Foster and Nyad.
Same here. I loved her.
That would be where my heart would go. But I do think that it would go to America Ferrera because she hasn't been represented very much along this award trail for this role. But yet she's been someone that's been talked about so much in Barbie. I think that's where it would go. But yeah, this is a complete lock. Like, of all the locks.
And talk about someone with gratitude and humility. Like, she's just, oh my God. And a lot of these people, a lot of these nominees have been on Mark Maron's podcast recently, and I've been listening to them. The Mark Ruffalo interview was, I didn't know I could like that man more. And I was like, oh my God, he's like really fucked up mentally and has worked through a lot of it and is still working on it. I love him even more. I get it, dude. And then Davine Joy Randolph, it was just beautiful. She's a trained opera singer. I had no idea. So she talked a lot about like breathing and like stuff you would appreciate. And just a really gentle, unique spirit. I just loved her. I think I texted you. I was like, I love this woman now. Like, I'm so happy she's going to win this. I love it.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. Very gracious. Very gracious. Dad, if you're listening, why don't you just go ahead and skip through this category? Because we have two awards to discuss for Best Actor in a Leading Role. The nominees for the actual award are Bradley Cooper, Maestro, Coleman Domingo, Rustin, Paul Giamatti, The Holdovers, Cillian Murphy, Oppenheimer, Jeffrey Wright, American Fiction. Before we get to who we think is going to win the Oscar, let's talk about the other award here. Because once a year, folks, when the Oscar campaign season is happening, there is someone who emerges very clearly as the jackass of the year. Last year, it was Austin Butler. God love him. I mean, just out there with the accent, and I'm going to talk like this forever, and I can, and it's the accent. It's all that. The year before, you already alluded to her. It was Jane Campion. She really put her foot in her mouth, and she still won her Oscar, but she hurt her film's chances. The Jackass of the Year award this year goes to none other than our beloved Maestro.
Oh my God.
Bradley Cooper himself, who has never failed to just keep his mouth shut this entire time. I know we've poked fun at Maestro along the way. He has run one of the just craziest Oscar campaigns in history. The constant crying, saying that Leonard Bernstein came into him every day on set. just 2 fucking days ago, I swear to God, just a few days ago, I opened like Twitter and he's talking about how his dad was naked around him all the time growing up and how he's totally comfortable being naked around his daughter all the time. And I'm like, why am I reading this? Like, you're campaigning for an Oscar. What's going on right now? And I mean, you just, buddy, you gotta make a movie and let us have it. Wow. I'm so fascinated to see where his directing career goes from here, because every time he did an interview, he was talking like the way he made this movie. I don't have any chairs on set. Are you kidding me? I don't have any playback. Are you kidding? And it's like, dude, I mean, you're sitting at a table with fucking Ridley Scott, man. Like, chill out a little bit. So, yeah, I mean, Wow. I thought we could just say a farewell to Bradley Cooper circa 2023, because we're about to be rid of him soon. God.
It's been a lot. It's been a lot.
It was a lot. That's all I'm saying. I'm having fun here, but it was a lot. It was a lot.
It's a lot. It's a lot of ridiculousness. And and you know what the thing is, though, is I'm actually excited to see what his third movie directing-wise is going to be. I mean, I know a lot of people actually didn't like A Star Is Born. I don't know. I don't know how you could not like that movie. But when that was happening, like, he was so humble.
So humble the whole time. The only thing, he overstepped once on that campaign trail when, right after the nominations, I don't know who was doing the interview, if it was Diane Sawyer, but they basically said, like, are you a little bum that you didn't get nominated for Best Director? And he said, yeah, like, I thought I did my job. And then I was like, ooh, don't do that. Don't do that. And he stopped. He didn't say that again, that campaign trail. But this version of him is completely different than who was promoting A Star Is Born. It's a very different vibe.
And what I really loved on that A Star Is Born time was anytime he was talking about the direction of that movie, I loved the way he spoke.
So did I.
I loved his approach to directing. I loved, and I think he is a good director. I really
do.
I think this one just kind of got away in a lot of ways. So it's almost kind of like wondering, like, is there going to be, with this next one, whatever it's going to be, where's he going to go? I'm curious. I'm very curious. Because, like we've always said on here, is we've dunked a lot on this one. But ultimately, at the end of the day, we do say that Maestro's not bad. It's just, it just fell short in ways that we needed it to not for us. I really want to see what happens, but I really want this to be over.
So do I. I just want it to be over. I don't want him to be forced to talk about Maestro anymore, but he will not be winning in this award. This award, I don't know. Seemed.
I'm going to start this one.
Go for it. Oh, God. Please go for it. Go for it.
It's a two-way race, and I actually really like Bradley Cooper and Maestro. He would actually be my second.
Oh, cool.
Personally, to win this. Now, oh my God.
Here we go, folks.
I love Paul Giamatti. Everyone does.
Yep, everyone does.
Everyone does. I think he's unbelievable. Like, I can't say enough good things about him. But, you know, there comes a situation where the performance just kind of comes around. That's just undeniable. And that is Cillian Murphy in Oppenheimer. There's so many good things to say about that movie. As we are, like, all the locks that I'm talking about, this is a masterful command of a performance in so many different ways. And the movie wouldn't work without it. Mm-hmm. This is about him. This is everything is about the weight of this. I just think that what's happening in this movie, by design, the movie is designed to have an actor make this work. And I just don't see how anything can beat a performance like this. So the fact that there is another performer that is just in Paul Giamatti, and I, like I said, I love him, but I'm like, I can't, like how is this happening?
Yeah, it's, I agree with all of that. If everyone likes Paul Giamatti, if he wins this year, it is a career win. It's all those people who thought he should have been nominated for and maybe even won for Sideways, and he wasn't even nominated for it. It's all that stuff. So we'll see. Cillian Murphy did win the SAG, which I was very thankful for. It seems to be tipping more his way. I hope that's the case, but is it because Randolph is already winning supporting actress? Are they going to do that with actor and just go, all right, we'll do boom, boom. We'll give him.
And just go with the holdovers.
Here's a bit of very random Oscar trivia. This is just weird how this happens sometimes. If Cillian Murphy and Robert Downey Jr. win, they'll be winning for the films of 2023. The last time an actor and supporting actor won for the same movie was 10 years ago in 2013, McConaughey and Jared Leto for Dallas Buyers Club. The time before that was 10 years earlier, 2003, Sean Penn and Tim Robbins, Mystic River. So that's just one of those weird things. So that'll be a cool thing if it happens. I do hope it happens. I definitely think Cillian Murphy should walk off with this. We're going to see. But I'm hoping good things there. I don't know. It's tough for me. It's tough. I don't know.
And I also want to say that, like, I wouldn't be angry if Paul Giamatti wins this. As, like, as a person that's watching the Oscars and has their own opinion, I love Paul Giamatti so much that I wouldn't be angry. So it's different from last year's conversation.
Yeah.
Like, I remember we were talking last year
between
Brendan Fraser and Austin Butler. And I was like, okay, this is Brendan Fraser. Let's not fuck this up.
Yeah. That would have just been terrible. That would, oh my God.
Yes. So this isn't like that.
Mm-mm.
This really isn't. This is just one of those things where I would be very happy for Paul Giamatti for that career, because that is a career win. And he is very good in The Holdovers. It would just be one of those things where I'm like, I think this is just where, this is where the awards get in the way of themselves, I think, sometimes, where you do give a career win over not necessarily like just looking at the overall year.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So I wouldn't be angry. I would just be a little deflated for Killian.
I would too. It's going to, for me, it will largely depend on how the night overall comes out. If picture and director go the way that everyone is predicting, like everyone is predicting, then that lessens the blow if actor goes to Giamatti to me, but we'll see. I also think both of these guys have a really good shot at being back here, but Killian Murphy doesn't, he's not someone who gets like the starring role a lot of the time, not in movies this big. So yeah, we'll see. We'll see. This next one, wow, the SAGs threw a wrench into this. Actress in a leading role.
Oof.
Annette Bening, Naiad, Lily Gladstone, Killers of the Flower Moon, Sandra Hüller, Anatomy of a Fall, Carey Mulligan, Maestro, Emma Stone, Poor Things. It's the Battle of the Stones, Lily versus Emma. If Emma Stone had not won this for La La Land in 2016, she would be walking away with this. She would be winning this, and it wouldn't really be. I that's my belief anyway. I don't think it would be much of a discussion. Now, we have Lily Gladstone coming up, who won the SAG, which I think was a bit of a shock. She was surprised, gave a great speech. I don't know who the favorite is here anymore. I don't know. I don't know who walks away with this. I have always, from the beginning, since I saw Killers of the Flower Moon, even on this podcast, I said, she's going to win it. After I saw Poor Things, I still said Lily Gladstone. I've always thought that this has nothing to do with which performance is better. It's all about like narratives, who's won before, who hasn't. Not many people had heard of Lily Gladstone until this movie, until this year. It's going to be a great moment in Oscar history if Lily Gladstone wins. Whereas if Emma Stone wins, it's going to be Emma Stone's second Oscar. It doesn't do anything. It's not like, wow, this is history in the making and that these are narratives that matter to voters. So my vote would go to Emma Stone. If I had a ballot, who do I think's going to win? It's a damn toss-up. They've both run great campaigns. They are friends. They've been very good about being like, this is not, we're not like duking it out privately. Like they're friendly, they're friends. So I don't know. We're going to see. It's Lily versus Emma.
Yeah. I don't know. You're 100% right that everything you said. Emma Stone is so good in Poor Things. She's just so freaking good. I think this will be the hardest one for me to pick on the day.
Yeah.
Of what do I think will win? So if it's between $500 and you punching Dan, this is the one.
This is best actor last year-ish, although Brendan Fraser didn't have an award. If Brendan Fraser had already had an Oscar, I would have been like, oh my God, he's not going to win and Austin Butler's going to win this. So again, not a one-to-one, but as my dad keeps saying, he's like, I want Lily and Emma to split, and then it goes to Annette Bening. And I'm like, Dad, it's not
going to
happen.
Oh my God. That's not going to happen.
No. But, you know, I don't know how well either of these films are going to do. We have not said Killers of the Flower Moon is going to win anything. So is this going to be another Marty movie that gets 10 nominations and does not get an award, or does it get 10 nominations and gets Best Actress? I don't know. Is Poor Things the type of movie that gets a bunch of nominations, but it does not win an award? Is that its pick? Because I don't think you've picked Poor Things. No, you did. You picked it to win production design and costume design. Yeah. So
No. I picked Barbie.
Oh, you picked
that.
Barbie. My mistake. So yeah, like, does Poor Things not get a single win? That will be nuts if we get all the way down
crazy.
To actress and Poor Things and Killers of the Flower Moon have not won anything. And then it's gonna go to one of those two, and that'll be like, the award of the movie. That'll be wild. I don't see that happening. I think Poor Things will win some of the technical. Maybe, though. I don't know. Maybe. This is the biggest of the major races. This is the biggest one to watch.
I agree. I'm in agreement.
And then since this is our last acting category before we get to the last two, they're going to do a really cool thing this year when they present these awards. They've only done it once. They did it in 2008, where they are going to have five previous winners of that award come on stage and introduce each nominee. So if you go back and watch, like, the year Heath Ledger won, for example, there's five best supporting actors on stage, and each of them give like 2 minutes to each nominee and talk about their performance. So that's what they're going to do this year. And I don't know everyone who's going to be on stage, but when best actor is presented, there's going to be five previous best actors on stage, and then someone, you know, will give it out. And I like that. It's cool. So just a bit of a programming thing.
No, that's kind of cool. But I have a question really quick about the show. Are we going to miss out on some awards like we did last year? Like, they're going to just...
No,
like,
they're doing them all. They're doing them all. That's done.
Good. Yeah, good, no. Good, good.
And I think they did them all last year. I think it was the year before. It might have been 2021.
Oh, the year before.
That's done. That was not received well at all. And I was... Holy Christ, was I mad about that. I was so mad. So mad.
Because, like, cinematography was one, right?
Yeah.
Like for 1 year? Yeah.
I think that was 2021 or... I don't remember... I was not pleased with that at all.
Yeah.
No, they're showing every award, right. Thank God. So, okay.
Good,
programming note. All right, here we go. Drum roll, director and picture. We'll do director first. Here are nominees. Justine Triet, Anatomy of a Fall. Martin Scorsese, Killers of the Flower Moon. Christopher Nolan, Oppenheimer. Yorgos Lanthimos, Poor Things. Jonathan Glazer, The Zone of Interest. Those are five utterly perfect nominees for this award this year. Just perfect, flawless nominees. I love.
Yep.
They all deserve to be here. Everyone is telling me Christopher Nolan is going to win this. I guess it's just really hard for my brain to believe this. But if you all are telling me that Christopher Nolan is going to win this, I hope that's what's happening. I just hope it's happening. I've heard comparisons to a bit of like how Spielberg was anointed with Schindler's List, and Spielberg was known really primarily for doing, he did some serious movies. The Color Purple is a serious movie, of course, but he was not known as like, whoa, serious, like Oscar director, not necessarily. And then when that movie came out, that winning picture and director was like kind of very much a foregone conclusion. I was too young, but I've tracked it like since, and everyone knew that was going to win. Is that what's happening here? Tell me.
It's a lock.
Fucking A. Oh, my God.
Back-to-back locks right here.
Picture. The nominees are American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Poor Things, Past Lives, The Zone of Interest. It's an oppie double. 1-2 punch.
It's an oppie homie win night.
God. Did you write down how many you think Oppenheimer will win? You don't have to tell me which ones they are, but do you have a number? I just want the number.
Eight.
Wow. Okay. Good guess. Okay. So here, as I parsed it out, because a lot of people are talking about this, I had seven, and that's very, you know, I'm lowballing it because I'm like nervous. So seven can happen. It happened last year with Everything Everywhere. It's been less popular with the preferential voting of Best Picture, but to get eight or over is incredibly rare. I actually didn't realize how rare it is. So the last time a movie did this, 2008, Slumdog Millionaire, 15 years ago, that movie won 8 Oscars. That was 15 years ago, and that movie wasn't even nominated for an acting award. So that's pretty wild that it walked away with 8.
That's crazy.
The time before that, we got to go to 2003, Lord of the Rings, Return of the King. It wins 11. Then we got to go to Titanic, 97. It wins 11.
Yeah.
That was a 1-2 punch because The English Patient the year before, 96, that won 9. But then The Last Emperor in 1987 won 9. So 1987 is a long time ago. This is not something that happens a lot. These huge sweeps are not common. So we're going to see it winning 8 does boost Oppenheimer up to a certain, you know, pedigree of film as it relates to Oscars. I don't know. I have it in the 7 category, which is still no slouch. I really hope it gets to 8. The 8 is going to depend on some of those, you know, kind of smaller ones that we're not really sure about, is, you know, costume design, production design. I don't know. Like, And then for it to win eight, it's got to cling to it has to win screenplay to win eight. Like it has to win.
That's the one.
That's the one for me that I actually didn't have it winning that. And I went, okay, so that leaves me at seven. I hope it's eight. It's very hard to get to nine. If we get to nine, then it needs to do makeup. It needs to do production design, costume design. But even for it to get to eight, it, you know, Zone of Interest can't win sound. Like it's gotta knock out like all the ones that people expect it to. We'll see. Either way, seven, eight. This is fantastic news to me. These are great numbers. It's great numbers. I love it. I love seeing it. Oh my God. So I'm really looking forward to Good Night. I'm very much looking forward to watching them with you. We are going to go live before. We'll be on our socials kind of posting about it. That's it. There we go. We got seven days till the big show. It's just going to be a better show than it's going to be the most fun Oscar show we've had since we've been doing this podcast because
the
stakes are just, they're way more fun. So I'm looking forward to a good night. The show is hosted by Jimmy Kimmel again, big presenter. So we got like Mahershala Ali. He's definitely going to present. He'll be one of the five presenting supporting actor. Nicolas Cage, Matthew McConaughey, Al Pacino, they're all going to be up there for actor. Sam Rockwell, he'll be up there for supporting actor. Jessica Lange will be up there for actress. Lupita Nyong'o will be up there for supporting actress. Michelle Pfeiffer is going to be a presenter. Yes. Zendaya is going to be a presenter. Oh. They're going to have some good people. It's going to be a good show. Oh, here's a fun question. Does Leo show up? Not nominated. When he's not nominated, traditionally, he does not show up.
I don't know. It's Marty,
but I don't know.
I think he'll show.
Okay.
I think he'll show.
I don't know. He may not, cause he's got to sit in the front row. That's all he's going to do. I don't know. We'll see. I hope he shows.
It's always good to see Leo.
If Lily Gladstone wins, she has him to thank a lot, just as it relates to campaigning. Cause every single interview that he did for Killers of the Flower Moon, she was right next to him. And he spent more time talking about her than his performance, which I really respect and appreciate.
Well, I think it's also understandable.
Yeah. Well, okay. We know how you feel about that. All this Leo. What'd you do for George?
I can't believe it.
Oh God, he was great. I gave you $20 when I came out. All right. Oscars, looking forward to him. It's going to be a lot of fun. What are you watching? Here we are. We've arrived. You stole mine right from under me. Robot Dreams. I'm going to list a few more that I've just been watching for funsies.
So I have three on here. Yes. Because they're the two that I haven't seen that I want to see. And that is American Fiction and The Zone of Interest. So I haven't even seen the movie and I just feel like I'm a champion for it because of just the way that I feel like that movie is doing something different. But the one movie that I can't get out of my head and you're going to hate it. You're not going to hate it, but you're going to roll your eyes. I have not stopped thinking about this movie since I saw it. And I think if I had to revise my top 10, it would go up a spot.
Mm-hmm.
It's Past Lives.
Really? Okay. All right. Well,
really, really, really can't stop thinking about it. And I really like it.
That's good. I'm glad you liked it. I mean, but would it be your vote for original screenplay, you think, like on your personal ballot?
No, actually, my personal ballot would go to May, December.
Yeah, yeah. I love that. I'm so glad I at least got nominated for that. Still surprised May, December to not do better with Todd Haynes of it all, the very famous people.
Natalie,
Julianne, all Oscar winners, Natalie. Netflix. Very surprised by that. Do you think you will be seeing the movies you haven't seen before Oscar night? Zone of Interest.
I really want to see the Zone of Interest before Oscar night.
That's the one I'd rather see than Dune 2, honestly. I'd rather go see that.
You're crazy.
Why?
Because Dune is awesome.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm going to... Okay, so... All right, good. I hope you get to see those. Let's go to Dune's too long. So I don't think we have too many pods. We got to deal with Dan. All right, we'll figure it out.
No, we can't do it, but I have not been excited for a movie in a long time. I'm very excited to see Dune 2. I'm just putting that out there.
Okay, well, that I wanted to kind of, all right, we'll get to that.
Very excited.
No, we'll just do, all right, let's do it now. Programming delays. I was going to initially be watching that and then we were going to record this episode and some things happened. So we recorded this episode about an hour after we finish. I'm going to see Dune 2 in IMAX. And you said, and I shared something with you, and you were like, let's just talk it out on the pods. That's what we're going to do. So I didn't know that's how you felt about it. I should be more excited, and I'm just not excited, really. I don't know why. People, I love Denis Villeneuve. I liked the first movie, but I'm like, okay. And now I can track it. We already got into the conversation with Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. I'm not a fan of this like serialization, and I've never read the book. I've seen David Lynch's film. I know he condensed a lot down, but I don't know how this story ends. I don't remember from Lynch's film, and I've never read the book. So what I'm about to say, this is not a Dune 2 spoiler, because I've not watched the trailer. I haven't read a single thing about it, but it's been all over the press, and I'm seeing everyone say how excited they are for potential third movie. So when you say that, and I didn't know there could be a third movie, it just, it's like, there's no stakes. So like, so no one dies, which is fine. No one has to die. But now
you don't know that.
I don't know it. But then if you're that excited to like come back for the third movie, and you're that excited to come back like as a ghost or like a figment because you were killed, like okay. But now when I go watch this movie and characters are in peril, I know in the back of my head, there's no actual danger that can like befall them because they're going, it's like, we're talking about superheroes, which is fine if that's what it's supposed to be. But I don't know when this ends. Is there room for a Dune 4? And I'm serious. Is this an Avatar situation? Like, go look at Denis Villeneuve's movies. The man for many years, one movie to the next, they had nothing in common. They were so different thematically what they were about. And that's all good. If the man wants to be in Dune world for a decade, I guess that's cool. I wish he was still doing other stuff. So I don't know. I also wish I didn't feel this way, but I'm not like, I'm going to see it, but I'm not like that excited for it. I mean, I don't know.
You're talking about a director that you love, and this is this dude's favorite fucking thing. Dune is like the thing that he loves. It's what got him into everything. He's talked about it. I mean, let the dude tell the story that he wants to tell.
I am. And I'm excited to see it. I have all open mind, and I'm sure I'm going to watch it and be completely wowed and dumbfounded by like its awesome power. I rewatched the first one yesterday, and I was like, okay, like getting into the vibe of it. I do think it's going to be a good movie, but it's not the movie itself. Dune 2 might be a good movie, but when Dune 1 started, and me, I had no fucking clue that it was going to be two movies. And the first thing you see in that movie is Dune Part 1. I, in the theater, went, Part 1 of what? Like, what's happening here? When does Part 2 come out? And all I'm saying is, Dune 2, I'm seeing it today. I shouldn't, Dune, what are they calling it? Messiah? I shouldn't even know what the third movie could potentially be called. But that's all anyone's talking about. Third movie. So it just bums me out. It bums me out that there are no...
Did you have the same stakes like question for yourself when you saw the first one?
This is the only thing that was in my head the entire time when I saw Dune Part 1. That first viewing, like a lot of it was ruined for me but I spent the first half hour of that movie going, what the fuck is going on? How many movies is this? How am I just learning right here that this is Dune Part 1? I thought when I walked into that movie, I was getting the whole Dune experience, and that 3 years later in 2024, Denis Villeneuve and everyone involved were going to be moving on. We'll have moved on to something else. I just don't know, like, when does this end? That's all I'm saying. It is not Dune's fault. It's a fault of it's what is happening to movies now. I can apply this exact argument to Across the Spider-Verse, which you said, you know, you didn't like. Now, maybe Dune 2 does end with a big battle, but we all know the first one didn't. I gave the first one a pass, but the first one ends with a hand-to-hand knife fight. Yeah. And then they go off and say, you know, this is just the beginning, which is exactly how Across the Spider-Verse kind of ends, which we just gave shit for. We just gave shit to that. So, like, when does this end?
But it lets you know, Dune Part 1, okay, there's going to be more. Like, we know, like, it's telling you that there's a sock. All right.
Yeah, play cool, hot shot. If you do the Avatar thing and he's like, hey, my career is Avatar only, I'm doing five movies, sorry, that's all you're getting, then I go, Okay, but we talked about that on the way to the water pod. Like, do we miss that we don't get Jim Cameron anymore? We only get Avatar Jim Cameron. We do not get Big Jim making like other movies. So I don't think Denis Villeneuve is going to do Dune forever, but I don't know when this ends. So now you're talking about Dune Messiah, which is probably going to come out in 2027. This is not Dune's fault. This is not Denis Villeneuve's fault, but I do think we're giving the exact same argument to the Spider-Verse stuff. I think it's one and one what we're doing here.
I think this one's just like, there's just like you're talking just about a better movie right here. It's a better experience.
Well, see, I'm hoping for good things. I want to be wowed by it.
I mean, listen, you're talking about a guy that doesn't like these types of movies at all either.
I don't either. That's the thing. Yeah. Like, I usually don't like these. And you know, it's longer, it's bigger, it's got a bigger cast, but I'm just sitting here wondering in the back of my head, how long is Denis Villeneuve going to be in Dune World? Like,
it's heavy, man. You're just so I heavy.
I know. I'm excited to see it.
I'm excited to see it.
I hope my overall point is that I don't really like knowing going in that another movie is coming. That's all.
You know, there's all sorts of potential for stakes. I feel like Denis is going to give you those.
It'll raise it up beyond just that. Yeah, and that's like, it's kind of nice to be in this position where I'm like, and like I'm not flipping out. I'm not really excited for it. I'm just going to like watch a movie, and I hopefully will get like pretty blown away. Or you know, I'm doing it. I'm doing the IMAX thing. I'm seeing in the best theater possible. I'm ready. I'm not going to be looking for faults or anything like that with a movie like this. I mean, it's what I did with the first one. I just give into it because I don't know what the fuck they're talking about. I don't know like all the terminology and stuff. So I'm just going to give in. No, I am excited. Denis Villeneuve, you got to look at the director. He does not.
He doesn't do
really
bad.
He really doesn't miss. Yeah, he doesn't do bad. And I'm still ecstatic that he agreed to push Dune 2. Because if this movie, oh man, would have come out when it was supposed to, it would be giving Oppenheimer a huge run for a lot of these awards, a lot of the technical awards. So I'm very happy for that. We're going to see how it all pans out. WAYW_podcast, 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, the day of the Oscars. We'll promote it elsewhere as well. Tune in, ask us questions, interact. We will be live with our actual day of predictions on that day. Very excited. Excited to see you soon. Just a few short days, my friend.
Oh, yeah.
WAYW_podcast. Find us everywhere. Here we come, Oscars. As always, thanks for listening and happy watching. Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. You can watch my films and read my movie blog at alexwithrow.com. NicholasDostal.com is where you can find all of Nick's film work. Send us mailbag questions at whatareyouwatchingpodcast@gmail.com or find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd at WAYW_podcast. Okay, one more time. Instagram Live, Sunday, March 10th, 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time at WAYW_podcast. Join us. And of course, next time is our coveted Oscar recap episode where we will discuss the winners of the 96th Annual Academy Awards directly after they take place. Stay tuned.